Hello, my dear friend. I am excited to introduce you to my guest today, Nirja Singh. No other than that. A friend that, came, well, she came through a friend of mine, Monique Bloxhill, who is actually also been on this podcast series. Now, just to tell you a little bit about Nirja, she is a remarkable individual committed to inspiring change and fostering connections in a world plagued by generational divides. With a diverse background in education, media, and communication, Nirja brings a unique perspective to the conversation on leadership beyond gender. With a passion for storytelling and a profound understanding of the power of media, Nirja has worked extensively in advertising, public relations, documentary filmmaking, and feature journalism. Through these experiences, she has witnessed firsthand the impact of stereotypes, biases, and disconnections that exist between generations. In 2013, two personal incidents catalyzed Nirja's deep exploration of the generation gap. For recognizing the effect of this divide, she became determined to bridge the distance and foster understanding among individuals of all ages. Nirja believes embracing empathy, connection and open dialogue can overcome barriers and create a more inclusive society. As a millennial with the benefits of hindsight, Nirja embraces ambition, tech savviness, and a drive to shape her ideas and share them with the world. Her unique perspective and insights are rooted in personal experiences with a deep commitment to breaking societal barriers. Beyond her professional endeavors, Nirja is actively mentoring and empowering others. She serves as an advisory board member and president of the Speakers Association in Delhi, where she guides aspiring leaders in developing their voices and making a meaningful impact. I am really excited to interview Nirja for my upcoming book, Leadership Beyond Gender, and giving her insights, as I know she will be sharing her journey, her wisdom and practical strategies for fostering understanding, empathy, and connections across generations. I am so excited, Nitya. Welcome to, well, first of all, as a podcast, it's the Changemakers podcast, and as being just part of this, my exploration of leadership beyond gender. And on that note, I just
Yes.
want to start by asking you, what is the first thing that comes up in your mind when you think of leadership beyond gender?
Thank you, Runa, and congratulations on working on this book because it addresses a very seminal, very important core subject. And this is something that is so sensitive that we need to keep going back to it and re-examining our assumptions. The first thing that comes to my mind when you talk of gender in leadership is that, well, that the gender revolution has stalled. And somewhere we are losing the plot a little bit, which is why I say it's very important to keep going back and re-examining what are the scripts that we are following. Now, you and I know that women do get a lot of low-paid jobs, middle management positions, and there are very few of them at the top. And this is the new frontier, Runa, the executive feminism. Because unless we have women in positions of power and people who can understand what actually happens with this gender, it'll be difficult to bring about policies, which is what is really important in bringing around any lasting change. And a very, very minuscule percentage of the Fortune CEOs are women, a very small percentage. And the fact is that women are earning more college degrees, and they are 46% more than that now of the labor force, but they hold only half of the managerial positions. And men are still running the world. Nothing wrong with that. We'll get to that later. But I believe that at the current rates, it's going to take 3 centuries for women to reach parity as CEOs. 3 centuries, imagine. And I want to share one thing here about my own country, which is such a strange phenomena that is happening. In India, our economy has grown more than 10 times since 1990. But the statistics say that a female workforce has fallen from 30% in 1990 to 19% in 2021. How's that happening?
Wow.
And of course, there is a patriarchal Indian society on one side. On the other side is a hugely aspirational individual women, but it's the pixel here looks more attractive than the total picture. And that's something that people like you need to really go behind and to understand what exactly is going on, despite all the talk of women empowerment.
Yeah.
So these are the things that come to mind when you talk about gender leadership.
Yeah, that is, and that is so interesting to hear, and actually frightening to hear this, these numbers, to be honest. Quite, yeah. And well, yeah, well, do you then think that it's humanly possible to achieve leadership beyond gender, that we can see a world where you are valued for who you are, not by your gender?
Exactly. Good question to ask. Despite what I just shared with you, Runa, there are two good things that are happening. One is that the younger women, even in India, more so in India, in fact, today, because we are a very aspirational country. These young women are extremely aspirational, and there is an advantage these days of flexibility at work. So there is work from home. That advantage exists. And which brings us to this question that you just asked me. Yes, I do believe it's possible for humanity to achieve leadership beyond genders. And the reason is the new generation.
Yeah.
I think it is the young people who are asking the right questions.
Yeah.
And in fact, they're not waiting for the answers.
Yeah.
And you may have heard of a youth initiative that was recently launched, and Stanford University has taken it up. They call it EHLI, which stands for Elimination of Harmful Language Initiative. Now, these children are asking for sensitivity in language, and they're asking it of very established authors such as Roald Dahl, Agatha Christie, and Stanford is taking note of this. So they've come out with a micro list of unacceptable terms and phrases because the young are insisting.
Yeah.
So the young are one reason I think we are going to achieve this parity. Secondly, because of technology. I think we may be moving in a direction where technology is technology makes gender irrelevant. It doesn't matter what the gender of the person is who's sitting on the buttons.
Yeah.
And thirdly, because I think we are at a cusp of gender out. I'm calling it gender out in the context of a white out. For instance, in your part of the continent, perhaps when it snows, there's a white out. You can't see where you're going. And in that white out, you need your safeguards in place. Perhaps you'll put a rope that tells you which way to go. Now, we are facing a situation where I think there might be a gender out, Runa. For instance, there is an asexuality movement.
Yeah.
More and more young people coming out to say they don't feel the need for sex. Yeah. So this is one part.
Yeah.
The other part is where, yes, where young people say that they just don't feel attracted because men are not men anymore, women are not women anymore, and that polarity no longer exists. It is diluted.
Yeah.
And there are also the declining fertility rates, Runa. And one more thing I'd like to share with you, a concept called peak humanity. So if humanity, as per certain researchers, has hit its highest ever, which means we can't run any faster, we can't grow any taller, and singularity is coming in, man-machine existence, all this is, I think, creating circumstances where it will cease to matter. The gender of the person, there'll be other features, other qualities like your moral values, perhaps integrity, compassionate skills, the ability to just connect with people, I think that might become important, and it'll be important for any gender. And we're not just talking about two genders here, because there are all the genders in between, right?
Yep.
Yes.
That is, yeah. I agree with you on that one. I think it seems that it seems like it's generational.
Yes.
And at the same time, I'm aware that the when for instance, when I was young, that was a talk, but somehow we got into that old paradigm, and that became the habit again. So I'm just crossing my
Right.
fingers and toes that the leaders that are rising now are going to hold that space and not move away from
Yes.
it, regardless of what their society is going to be banging on them and say, well, this doesn't work, that they are consistent and plow through.
Right.
Your work has been a lot about stereotyping, and particularly when it comes to what I call the age box. I box this into
Absolutely,
the gender box,
absolutely.
the age box.
Yes.
In your experience, how has stereotypes influenced the perception and opportunities for leadership roles? And can you share maybe any specific incidents where you witnessed, excuse me, the impact of these stereotypes on individuals' journals?
Absolutely, Aruna, there are stereotypes all around us. And even what you just mentioned about the CEOs, the new CEOs being cognizant of the significance of having women come into leadership roles, even there is this implicit bias that the caregiving role is inferior. And which is partly one of the reasons why women felt the need to step out when their role at home and in spaces where they are helping others, nurturing them, helping, kind of contributing to the evolution, which is such a crucial central role to humanity, to our survival, when that becomes to be devalued and not considered worthy of a status high enough as let's say a professional man, and that also in the fields of technology. So there is a huge bias to start with there. Then there's a bias around women. For instance, women have cat fights. A woman supporting another woman is considered almost an improbability. And there is a bias about women being rich and powerful. They get the short end of the stick for just being successful, that a successful woman is not the thing. So scripts that we are buying into, that we are selling, when we are constantly repeating those scripts, we need to be really, really very careful with that. I did mention that the caregiving role, I think what we are approaching now is almost a gender war. And that's very, very unfortunate, because a lot of men today are at the receiving end, Runa. When we talk about female leadership roles, we also need to be sensitive to what the men are thinking. We also need to be sensitive to the circumstances that can facilitate women coming into leadership roles, because we need men to be our allies. We can't do this alone.
Absolutely.
This is not about one gender being against another gender. And for some reason, this whole idea of equality, equity has become about being the same. That's not possible. Biologically, we are different. Yes, we are different people. We're different beings, creatures, different creatures. But that can't happen. Then telling girls to be as strong as boys, why not tell them, why not value them for their inherent, what you call estrogen, their hormone-based strengths, perhaps the qualities that come naturally to you. Today we curse patriarchy, Una, but patriarchy has been responsible of protecting a particular, it's been that way since times what they call immemorial, to use a cliche. But we've just bought into the script of patriarchy, that it's anti-women, it is anti progressive ideas. But I think what we need to do is go back to the scripts and question those scripts. And I want to share something here about my own daughter.
Yeah.
Runa, her name was Aksir, and Aksir died of suicide. And this was a year and a half ago. And believe you me, this child, 31-year-old woman, she had undergone premium education, the topmost law school in India, then did her master's in psychology, worked with Google Hong Kong, and her project was on freedom of expression.
Yeah.
She had everything,
yeah.
Yet she didn't feel enough. And the day before she took her own life,
yeah.
You know what she told me?
Yeah.
My heart shatters every time I get a lump in my throat when I see this, Runa. She just gave me a look. She looked me in the eyes and she said, "Ma, I never wanted any of this." Runa, she was 31. She wanted to get married and have a child. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
But her education, all the scripts around her, which told her that you need to be self-sufficient. You're a modern woman. This is what everybody admires. You need to have leadership qualities. I encouraged her. I used to talk about this on the dining table. And then to have my child look me in the eye and say, "I never wanted any of this." And that's when I stopped, Runa, and asked myself, where are we going? Where are we going?
Yeah, exactly.
What are we really chasing here?
Go back to the
basics and ask ourselves, where did we start?
Yes.
How did we get here? And what are we trying to achieve? So that valuing each other, what you said, has to happen everywhere, not just in the boardroom, not just in a professional office. It has to happen at home, in society, everywhere. And this is such a central, you know, role that women have been playing in the past of bringing up children, but that just got twisted in a manner, so to say.
Yeah.
So now we are approaching a state, maybe a position where there is an equal partnership, which is great. But the next question is how to get to that.
Yeah.
How to get to that kind of that nature of equality where there's mutual acceptance, acknowledgement, respect, and hopefully affection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thank you so much for sharing that. My heart jumped. Thank you.
Yes,
because
thanks.
I think what you just shared is so important, and is about giving people space to figure out who
yes.
am I and what do I desire in this world, rather than following the script, following the conditions. Because nowadays, this has actually been a big worry of mine, is why are we, as much as I am for, and I've been fighting for gender equality and for fighting for women to be equally
yes.
seen for as long as I can remember, but I also think at the same time, it's like we have not been able to hold space for two thoughts at the same time, meaning in order for that to happen, we also must look at our biases towards men. And we must
yes.
look, we must
yes.
look at that as well and address that, because that is not serving them. And that
no.
is not
no.
that is not helping them to step into even being able to say, "Hey, I just want to be a dad."
I know.
We don't even allow that.
It's sad. It's really sad, you know.
It's a big thing. It's such a big thing to handle. And at the same time, when you say this so beautifully, thank you so much for how you're sharing this, because at the same time you say, yes, with technology, with AI, with things that can help us on the way, we as humanity, we got to be human.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And show what makes us different and how we can do things differently than the machines and the AI and everything. How we can
yes.
work on this together. And I had a really interesting conversation about the, you know, now we have the quantum computers coming in.
Yes.
Yes. At the same time, I think it's our mission as humanity that we start to challenge us to think in a quantum way.
Yes.
And so, wow, that is so big. Nirtya, thank you so very much for sharing that.
Multiple,
In
yes.
so when it comes to what strategies or approaches do you feel is most effective in uncovering and addressing these script like you talk about?
Right. What I read and observe and experience, Runa, has been that, like I mentioned at the beginning, there's a kind of a backlash. So you have a feminism and then you have the masculinist movement at the other end of the spectrum. Now, awareness. Number one is awareness. When we talk about strategy, the fact that, yes, sexism is a system that privileges men. It has been privileging them, but also polices their behavior. I think we haven't looked at that aspect of this, equation deeply enough. So it polices their behavior. Remember that. And when they are empathizing with feminism, the other men don't look upon them very kindly. They kind of get singled out. So understand the sensitivity of the men also. And they call it the pedestal effect. So if I have a man friend, a male friend who is seen as an ally, he suddenly comes down in his status with the rest of his male colleagues. That's how the dynamics are, the social dynamics. That's awareness. And of course, the presumption should be that we make gender balance a norm, not the exception, but it's just that we haven't reached that state as yet. So I was reading on this and I came across something which was very interesting. And that particular writer talks about turning gender balance into a business issue. Business issue in the sense, let's look upon it as a way to maximize our profits. Say that gender balance is very good for business. Gender balance is very good for operational effectivity. Gender balance is very good for productivity, for work-life balance, for our mental health, all of these things, and pitch it like that. And to do that, to begin with, use the male-dominated hierarchies instead of rubbishing them or dismissing them or calling them out or scolding them. Use those hierarchies. Have them reframe the issue and say that gender balance will deliver better performance and return. So that is one way of doing it. The other way is that stop calling it a moral issue so much. Diversity or women's issue is not really a moral issue. It's a sensible business-driven issue. Then policy. Gender balance has to become a shared responsibility, not a moral imperative. If you keep harping on this in your businesses, in your workforce, amongst your managers, and instead of a feminist-driven, rights-based approach, you try and make it an argument of, like I just said, an instrumental kind of an argument, which will take you from a discussion of women empowerment to a discussion of male integration. So get the men engaged. How do you get them convinced? And how do you pull them on board? That's the only way to get to parity, because that's the only way to get to acceptance. Otherwise, even if one odd woman here and there does manage to get a foot into that executive door, the fact has been that usually women are successful only when they distance themselves from other women. We do that. We do that. The minute you start becoming, it just happens that way. But that doesn't work for the rest of us. So when you say strategy, yes, there are very specific strategies where you could have workshops, trainings, all of that, a whole lot of memorabilia around to keep reminding you. But at the base, underneath all this, a very clear awareness of what are the dynamics at work, and then treat this whole issue.
It takes courage to lead your life and double courage to lead other lives.
Yes.
what you are doing with your work is remarkable, and it is for sure a big way for us to create a world where we feel that we are of value, that our soul calling is something to listen to, and that we listen to other people's soul calling and honor them
Yes.
rather than following the script. I'm so moved by this conversation that we have, Nidia. Thank you so
Thank
much
you,
for being part of this, and thank you for sharing your voice.
it's an honor. It's a privilege to be asked to share this with you, Runa. I've enjoyed this too. Thank you so much. And you're doing fantastic work with this book. We really need a lot of literature because literature is what that gives it credibility, right? And keeps the conversation, the dialogue moving. That's the only way forward. It's the
It's the
only way
only way
forward. Yeah.
forward. That's
Yeah.
true. Let's go forward.
Yes. Cheers to you.